children's mental health problems are real, they're common, and they are treatable. According to research, 1 in 5 children has a diagnosable mental health problem, but nearly 2/3 of them get little or no help. Untreated mental health problems can disrupt children's functioning at home, at school, and even within the community. And without treatment, children with mental health issues are at a higher risk of school failure, contact with the criminal justice system, dependence on social services, even suicide. Joining me today to talk about Idaho's new Youth Empowerment Program, which is also known as YES, is Ross Edmonds with the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, Carol Dixon with the Idaho Federation of Families, and Janet Hakey. She's a parent and also a statewide trainer for the YES program. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
First question, why was YES created? Who can answer that for me?
Ross, I'm going to send that one to you.
YES was created, I mean, first and foremost, we all want to see improvements in the way that mental health services are delivered in the state of Idaho. It really came from a lawsuit, a long-lasting lawsuit, in which we've sat down with the plaintiffs. The plaintiffs in the case are families of children that have serious emotional disturbance. It was a settlement agreement, but really what we learned through that as a court case is that we have the same desire in mind, and that is to see improvements in the children's mental health system, better support for families, better treatment for kids to help them live a more productive, happier, more fulfilled life.
And Ross, didn't it come too from the fact that it was separating adult treatment with youth treatment, that's part of this program?
Yeah, the lawsuit was originally filed in 1980. And at the time, children, adolescents, mm-hmm. and adults were commingled at our state hospital, our state psychiatric hospital. It was common practice around the country at that time for that to occur. That was resolved within a couple of years. We resolved that. But the lawsuit really then sort of went into the idea that there should be services available in the community that keeps children out of institutions. They shouldn't have to go to an institution to help with their mental health. Instead, they should be able to stay in their own communities and get community-based services.
And Carol, maybe you can answer this question, but what makes assessing and treating youth and teens, you know, different from adults?
Just developmentally, children are different than adults as far as how they present problems, when they present problems, how one problem leads to another problem. So often children, when they are in the past being viewed, they have looked at them from kind of the prism of an adult, and they miss a lot of what's significant about child development.
And this is something that is treatable if kids get the proper diagnosis and the proper help.
Well, it's definitely the earlier that you treat and first recognize and assess and treat, the more likely that these problems will not follow them into adulthood, or they become manageable so that it doesn't interrupt the life to the degree that we see so many adults who can't function in the community. They can't hold jobs. Their health is horrible. Their mental health is horrible. Relationships. So if you can recognize it at a much earlier age, you don't have the same problems that you have, you know, 10, 20 years down the road.
And when we talk about mental health, I think sometimes people think, oh, my gosh. I mean, it can be a scary term. And Janet, you are a parent.
Yes.
And you have a child with a mental health issue, correct? And this is why you've gotten involved.
Yes.
And when we talk about this, I mean, a lot of times it can be something anxiety. I mean, anxiety is a diagnosable mental health issue, but kids can be treated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Part of the problem that we have with mental health throughout the country is the stigma that's associated mm-hmm. with it. And it's very difficult for parents to reach out for help for their children if they believe there's going to be a stigma that's going to follow their child. And we find this frequently as one of the major reasons why people don't seek treatment for mental health is they feel like there's going to be some kind of stigma that's going to follow them or their child.
So how did you get involved with the YES program? I am assuming because of your child needing services.
My situation was a little bit different. I actually lost my child to suicide 7 years ago. So he was – the experience that I had with him and knowing other families who have children who have current mental health issues and how accessing the system was for him and trying to access it for these other families, I was very much moved to be able to – make his story worth more than just his life, to give it meaning, to go beyond. And so many parents who are dealing with serious emotional disturbances, they're overwhelmed by their own circumstances right now. And participating in a situation and redesigning these services is a big commitment. And sometimes that can be very challenging for them. So the fact that Unfortunately, my mental health issue has reached a resolution with my child. Right. It did allow me the freedom, though, to be able to participate in a way that I wouldn't have had it been going on.
But if your son had had the services that YES provides, do you think there could have potentially been a different outcome?
Absolutely.
And I know that's a hard question.
It is. And you don't ever want to live in the what ifs.
Right.
As parents, we do that a lot anyway.
Oh, we do it all the time.
Right. But a lot of the services and supports that are being developed, even from the very start with the new assessment tool we're using, the CANS, it's called the Child and Adolescent Needs and Strengths. So it's nicknamed the CANS acronym. It looks at the whole child. So all the assessments we've had in the past have been deficits-based. What's wrong with your child? Mm. And we know that a child is so much more than that. And it also extends to their family. What does the family need for the child to function better? What does the child need to function better? And even better than that, where are their strengths? What do they do really well? What can we build on and give this child, you know, an area to build and get stronger in that will help support some of the areas they have needs in.
How long has the YES program been in place here in Idaho now?
It's still being implemented. It's
we're
not
talking
done.
Brand new.
It is very brand new, and really just in the implementation phase, not even fully implemented yet. But we're developing it. We're adding new services. We added new eligibility category under Medicaid specifically for children with serious emotional disturbance, so more kids can get access to the services available under the Medicaid system. We've added a few services over the next, really it's over the next 12 to 15 months in which you'll see a tremendous growth in terms of the array of services. And what I mean by that is right now our services are good for someone who has kind of a minor need or somebody who's at sort of the last stage, right? We have inpatient care or we have kind of, you know, medium level care. We don't have all the stuff that's important in the middle to help keep kids in their families, keep them in their own homes. So that's what's really going to be rolling out over the next year. And it's just so exciting. It's so exciting to have the opportunity to partner with families. Which is when Janet was talking, that's one thing I wanted to say is this isn't possible just for a state entity or a provider to do this. Mm-hmm. If we don't have parents at the table with us, we don't have a hope of really meeting their needs if we're not truly engaging them as a part of the solution.
Because this program, so people understand, has been a collaboration with the state, with private entities, as well as with families. And my next question then is, is this something that every family can access, this program? And what I mean by that is a lot of times when we think of, you know, health and welfare, we think of families who are on, you know, the lower end of the economic spectrum, things like that. But is this something that any family who has a child that they think, you know, maybe they have, you know, like you said, Ross, a minor mental health issue, right, all the way up to something that maybe they need to be hospitalized.
Yeah.
Where does that work?
So all families will be able to access assessment to kind of see where their child. The YES program really is for children with what we call serious emotional disturbance. Janet had mentioned the CANS. The CANS is one of those instruments that helps us measure the level of functional impairment. That means we know that they have a mental illness. I sort of hate calling it mental illness sometimes because I hate to put labels on stuff, but we know that they have a diagnosable mental illness. Then we measure how much that mental illness impacts their ability to function successfully, as you mentioned before, at school, at home, in the community. So
right.
This is for kids with serious emotional disturbance, but services are available. And why wouldn't we want to make services available before they get to that point so we can prevent them from developing into a serious emotional disturbance?
Carol, do we see this a lot more than the general public may realize when it comes to children and teenagers with mental health issues?
I think going back to what Janet said, because there's such a stigma about mental illness, that there's a lot of families that isolate, they hide. And so it's not seen as much in the public. I know within the school systems, a lot of time what happens is that you have a child who's really struggling and they may get labeled as, you know, a defiant kid, a kid who has behavioral problems. And does not get recognized as a child who has an underlying mental health issue. So, yes, I think culturally we're not at a place mm-hmm. where we're really willing to say this is something that we need to address as a mental health condition. So it gets hidden, it gets played off as other things.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are some of the signs or things like that that parents should be, you know, looking for? Because it is something that in this day and age, I think sometimes we think, like, you know, they might be a little anxious, they might be this, they might be that. And we go down, I think as moms especially, you can go down a path of, well, there's something, you know, wrong. So what do we look for? Maybe Carol or Janet, you could answer that question.
Go for it, Janet.
I think for me, for a long time, I was in denial. I didn't want my son to have a mental illness. And unfortunately, what you don't want to be the case, you frequently don't see to be the case. You play it off as other things. For parents out there that are struggling and wondering, you know, is this a mental illness, or is this a parenting problem, or is this a behavior issue, or, you know, where does this come from? You know, I think talk to your pediatrician. If you're finding that the way you're having to parent your child is vastly different from how other parents are, you know, parenting their children, or you're having experiences that just seem pretty far off the spectrum, you know, you can always call Liberty Healthcare and they can do an independent assessment to help assess whether there actually is a mental health issue going on.
So basically, as a parent, if you have that little spider sense, ask your pediatrician mm-hmm. or go to Health and Welfare and ask for this CANS assessment.
And that's right. Listen to your gut. If something doesn't seem right, seek professional help, and I think a pediatrician is a great place to start.
We're talking about youth and teen mental health and Idaho's new Youth Empowerment Services Program. It's known as YES. My guests today are Ross Edmonds of the Department of Health and Welfare, Carol Dixon of Idaho Federation of Families, and Janet Hakey, a parent and YES volunteer. Janet, I want to talk to you a little bit about what you do as a volunteer, because you're going around statewide and training people on the YES program.
Part of what I've been asked to do, and actually part of what I asked to do in working with the state, was to be able to share parent perspective with providers and other stakeholders as they were trained on the YES system of care throughout the state. So the state has graciously allowed me to tag along with their team as they go and train all of their providers and other stakeholders throughout the state and provide some parent perspective on it, on what it's actually like to be a parent of a child with a mental health disorder. And that's been one of the most wonderful things this whole program for me, is to see the state actively seeking out parents and actively seeking out our experience and having that inform how they're developing services.
Ross, is this something that other states have rolled out, or is this something that's you know, more unique?
It's pretty split. I mean, there's a lot of states that have a much more advanced mental health system for kids than Idaho, but some are sort of in the same place as us. Mm-hmm. And what I'd say is that the pieces are there. There's a lot of pieces that we have available in the system, but they're not structured. They're not organized into a system. Nearly all of the kids that we identify, they're getting services, but it's not the right service at the right time. I think historically haven't engaged families as a solution to it. We haven't assessed kids. Janet talked earlier about looking at strengths. If somebody looked at one of us, any one of us, and talked about all the problems in our lives, does that really tell you who you are? Absolutely not. You have to know about your passions, the things you enjoy, the things you're good at. It's those sorts of transitions, making the leap to look at mental health delivery in a whole different way. That's where some states have gotten there, mm-hmm. or I should say are in the process of getting there. I don't think there's any perfect state that's doing this, but certainly some are a little bit ahead of Idaho. And I think, quite honestly, once we are, and I'm confident that we will successfully implement this YES program, we'll have one of the best children's mental health systems in the country.
We have a email from a listener. Her name is Jaysa. She's a teacher, a high school teacher at an alternative high school in Idaho. And she says that, you know, with the high school that she works at, that sometimes she sees certain behaviors that she believes may be some type of mental health issue. She says her problem is how do you approach the parents about that? What kind of advice could you give? And Janet, I'm looking right at you as a parent. How does she do that in a way to alert a parent or have that conversation?
It's a very challenging thing, and I think more challenging for teachers. If I understand the way the law works for teachers in the state, they're actually not even legally allowed to tell parents that they need that a child needs a medical service. I believe that's correct. Mm-hmm. So that presents some issues. But there are the school is actually the State Department of Education is creating a checklist for parents and for children themselves that they can quickly go through and identify whether or not they think they should be, you know, so they can self-refer, or the parent can look at that and say, okay, if these things are checked off, then there might be an issue there. So that may be a way to approach it with a family, is to say, you know, I've noticed some things with your sons. We're obviously having some challenges. We all want to be on the same page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here's a new resource.
So a teacher can't have that conversation, but could a teacher go to, like, the school counselor, and does that?
I think what it actually says is that a school can't, an educational professional can't identify a problem in which the school isn't. If they recognize it as a problem, they're then legally obligated to help deliver the care for that. And so it's and they have efforts towards doing that. I think the checklist that Jana had spoke about is a tool that we're coming out with to help with that. So I think there's some really good opportunities to do that. This is just what I would say from a clinician's perspective, and I'm a clinician. Every child that you raise, and I think that's important for families to know, every child, I have three children. I have to parent them all differently. Right?
Isn't that true?
And so they're not all the same, even in the same household. And so there are techniques and ways you can speak to families about, look, you're not doing something wrong. There's different ways that we have to interact with our children. We've recognized this with your child. Maybe we want to, you could seek an assessment. I think there's opportunities to do that. But we have to recognize that this doesn't, I think so often we view this, and this is the stigma that both Carol and Janet have talked about. We think there's something wrong to go and seek help. Mm-hmm.
And we think it's our fault as a parent. I think that's a big part of it too.
Yeah. Well, not only do we think it's our fault, the society in general tells us it's our fault.
Right.
When you see a child have a meltdown in public, the first thing you think is, I wouldn't parent that way. Mm-hmm. Well, why? Why wouldn't you parent that way? Well, you wouldn't parent that way because you don't want that to happen to you, and you think parenting caused it. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, that's the easy explanation. But mental illness is a medical diagnosis. Just like cancer, just like leukemia, just like anything else. And we would never look at a parent of a child who had leukemia or cancer and judge them in the same way that we do parents.
I think one thing that's happened for the past multiple years is that because we haven't had the services for kids with complex mental health needs, when the services don't exist, it then goes back to the parents to try to figure things out. And when it's above and beyond what their abilities are, then they end up being labeled as the ones that aren't doing it right. So essentially, we've like put them out there without having the services they need, and then turned around and blamed them because they couldn't make it work for their kid that had really complex needs. And that's what a lot of this project is changing, is that we're going to have the spectrum of services that are available for those kids.
I'm speaking with Ross Edmonds, Carol Dixon, and Janet Hakey about mental health services for youths and teens with the YES program that's being implemented here in Idaho, called Youth Empowerment Services. And this is a fascinating conversation. Carol, I want to get back to something that we talked about in the break, which is the pressures that are on kids these days versus when all of us were growing up. Mm-hmm. And how that is changing the need. Because when we look at social media, things like that, I know we come back to that a lot, but there is something to that.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think when I have discussions with my peer group and we talk about what it was growing up, and then we talk about our children and our adolescents and their experience of growing up with social media and the anxiety, and just like I had said, the number of friends that my children have that are on antidepressant, anti-anxiety medicines. And it's not just because they're doling out pills. It's because these kids are really having a tough time dealing with everything in their world. So my question always goes back to is what has happened in our world that has created so much pressure for our kids. And a lot of them, you know, with good counseling, just I'm a believer, don't just give a pill. It's like, you know, address the issue, bring
have
counseling
them talk to
in.
Someone.
Right, help them resolve it. And some of them are, most of them are absolutely fine. But you do find that there is a percent that it does lead into something more serious. And again, if you don't address it sooner than later, a lot of those problems can get big and harder to manage as the kids get older.
And is it something, too, that as parents that we need to maybe sometimes take a step back and you know, take ourselves out of the equation? And what I mean by that is it's not always about us. It's not necessarily our fault, you know, but also maybe sometimes let's not use as much social media. Let's, you know, things like that. Do you think that would make a difference?
I definitely think just that, you know, for it not to be a reflection on us, like you're saying, for us to get out of the way as parents and just really recognize where the kids are and meet them where they're at. Definitely. That whole social media equation, that's just, I mean, that's, I just, it was so challenging with my kids as it was new. Cell phones were just happening as my kids were growing up and the texting and all of the games they could play. And as a parent, it was really hard to figure out where those boundaries are. Mm-hmm. Where do you set the limits, knowing they could walk out of my house, go to their friend's house and jump on everything that I just told them I didn't want them on. So it's a challenge for parents.
And I would say there's some really healthy uses of social media, right? Some kids who are completely isolated have the ability to connect online when they wouldn't otherwise connect. But if that's their only outlet for social connection, that's a problem. There's some really unhealthy applications of social media. As we know, we hear about the bullying that occurs. We hear about all of those things. But there's some healthy opportunities with it, too. I think it really is kind of taking a look at that, look at the right opportunities and how to introduce it to your children in very healthy ways, as opposed to using it too much. The Federation actually sponsored a screening of a show called Screenagers, which is a really – it's an educational opportunity to help parents understand and kids understand appropriate and inappropriate use.
We have another listener, a question from Julie, and she asked, how much has the educational community been involved in implementing and creating the YES program?
So the State Department of Education is actually a defendant in this lawsuit. So I think we're still early in the reach out to school districts and individual educators. But the State Department of Education has been very engaged and at the table with us throughout this process. And actually right now we're bringing on some educational consultants to help us figure out the steps towards better opportunities to help educators in all of Idaho learn more about YES.
So the full implementation, hopefully within the next 12 to 15 months. And I want to applaud all of you for doing this. I think this is something that needs to be talked about. We need to stop being afraid to talk about it. And I'm glad we're doing it. So also very quickly, because I'm running out of time, if people want to get an assessment, just contact health and welfare? Is that the easiest thing to do, Ross?
Absolutely. We're trying to find an any-door approach. So talk to a school counselor. Talk to a probation officer. They're involved there. Call health and welfare. Call Optum Idaho. Any one of those are good opportunities.
I want to thank my guests today for joining me and talking about this issue. It is a much-needed conversation, so thank you, all three of you.